breaking ball and a call. Strike three. Third strikeout for Zach.
He's going to just watch it go. A grand slam for Bryson Stott.
And there's a high fly ball. Deep right field. Harper watches it fly.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to talk about the Phils here in the final week before the All-Star break. We'll talk a little Zach Wheeler and the incredible performance he had on Sunday, helping the Phillies win a series against the Reds in which a lot of frustration we saw from the Phillies offense by the Phillies offense, frustrating us during the course of the weekend. And we'll talk a little bit about that, but we'll talk about the Phillies All-Stars. We'll talk about the players who got snubbed a little bit. We'll also talk a little trade deadline. We are now in July, so it is officially hot stove season now. I want to get into a little Bryce Harper conversation as well, and some big news here in the National League East this week with the Phillies rival. So we'll get on to all that stuff coming up here in just a few minutes on this roundtable edition of the podcast. And Justin Clue, Liz Rocher, both joining me. Liz, of course, from Sabres Baseball Research Journal. You can follow her on X and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. Liz, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks. I really enjoyed watching the Zach Wheeler complete game. That was glorious. I didn't catch a lot of baseball this weekend or the past week, but it was nice to tune in and see that.
Incredible performance on Sunday against Zach Wheeler. We're going to talk about that in just a second. That's our lead story here on Justin Clue from Baseball Prospectus. Follow him on Blue Sky at Justin Clue. Justin, what's the good word over there?
I got a lead story for you.
Oh, hot one.
Let's
hot
hear it.
So Zach Wheeler, forced to share National League Player of the Week honors.
I saw that.
With the Cubs' Michael Busch.
Who is that? Now,
to answer that question, Michael Busch is the guy hitting .565 in the month of July, which is 1 week old. So he's hit .565 in the week that he was named Player of the Week. Fine. He had four home runs in that week. Fine. But three of them were in one game, which, you know, is also impressive. But the Cubs hit eight home runs in the game in which he hit three home runs. They would have won if he hadn't homered at all, whereas the Phillies might have choked to death on a hot dog if Zach Wheeler hadn't pitched the way he pitched in his last start. So why he's sharing this with Michael Busch, total mystery to me.
Yeah, it sounds like he could have been player of the game for that three-homer game, and we could have left it at that, and everybody could have had a hearty handshake and slap on the back. But, questionable.
A light slap on the back.
Eternal Phillies disrespect. That's all I got.
It never ends. It never ends. And we're going to get to
some of
that. I
don't know why, but everyone hates us.
This is a betrayal on levels previously unseen.
That's right. Unprecedented betrayal here of the Phillies. We've never seen anything like this before. Let's talk more about Zach Wheeler's start on Sunday. Obviously, a historic performance in Phillies history. Only base runner allowed the home run to, of all people, Austin Hayes, took him opposite field in the fifth inning on Sunday afternoon. And that is the only base runner Zach Wheeler allowed the entire afternoon. I didn't even realize it until we got to about the seventh inning or so. I started thinking to myself, I don't think anybody else has gotten on base other than the home run. So, I mean, you had essentially Zach Wheeler came this close to a perfect game. That's the kind of stuff that he had on Sunday. And this comes after he already won Pitcher of the Month for the month of June when he had an ERA under one. Justin, Zach Wheeler he's been pretty dialed in for most of his tenure in Philadelphia. This is the best he has ever thrown here in his age 35 season in Philadelphia. The best performance since Roy Halladay's no-hitter on Sunday in the playoffs on Sunday from Zach Wheeler.
If he wants that National League Cy Young, all he's got to do is keep pitching at an unthinkably historic level for the rest
Young
of the season.
He's going to get it.
It's that simple, folks. No,
and,
I was thinking.
And even then, they won't give it to him.
Even
They're
then, Paul Skeens.
He's new and exciting still. Ooh.
And what about like some of those Cubs pitchers they like? It's always going to be a trendy pick. Just give it to him. Give it to him now. Give it to him at the All-Star game.
Right now.
That's fine. Then he doesn't even have to play in the All-Star game. Well, anyway, I was thinking about pitchers the Phillies have traded for or signed and are known as like some of the best in franchise history. And most of them are guys who figured it out somewhere else. And then the Phillies signed them because they were good. Steve Carlton was pretty good immediately upon getting to the major leagues. It was his contract disputes that got him traded from the Cardinals. Jim Bunning was an all-star a bunch of times with the Tigers before the Phillies traded with him. And just sidebar, it's wild that in his 17-year career, he played like six non-consecutive years with the Phillies and like eight with the Tigers, but the Phillies retired his number. It's very interesting.
Yeah. It's the Hall of Fame. That's all it is.
But, those two guys, and then you have, like, the 2011 squad, Oswalt, Lee, Holiday. These were obviously pretty well-established. Lee, I don't know how well – he certainly wasn't on, like, Holiday levels, but he was still known as a very good pitcher that the Phillies went out and got. And obviously,
Oswalt, when they traded him in 2009, he's an all-star. Yeah. I mean, he only had a couple seasons under his belt, but, yeah.
He might have had a Cy Young.
He might have. Yeah, I think he might have.
So, the three of them were all well-established when the Phillies got him. I feel like Wheeler is kind of distinct in this, in that his brilliance was only glimpsed in like some brief windows in the majors before he came to Philadelphia. He had a half season here, a couple months there. In his debut season, he became the youngest Mets pitcher to record at least 12 strikeouts in a game since Doc Gooden, which, you know, that's going to get you on the map. Then shoulder stiffness, inconsistent command, lots of walks, couple of tendon tears, Tommy John surgery, a follow-up surgery, more elbow discomfort, tons of plasma injections along the way. It keeps going. Velocity drop, bicep tendonitis, reporters questioning his usage based on when he started to feel discomfort. The Mets signed Jason Vargas, presumably to take Wheeler's spot. He has a bad spring, which seems to confirm this. Then he's finally healthy, but they jam him back down in the minors. Vargas gets hurt. Wheeler comes back, dominates, gets shut down in September. The next year is 2019. The Mets say they want to keep him as free agency looms. Obviously, they don't. The Phillies sign him, and all the up and down kind of just goes away. He's been remarkably stable since coming to the Phillies. You can call out, I'm sure, you know, different stretches, perhaps, in which he's looked human. You can talk about the spike in runs allowed he had in 2023, finished with an ERA closer to 4 than 2 that year. But that same year, he finished 6th in National League Cy Young voting and won a gold glove, kind of just for fun. So as Wheeler dominates and firmly enters the debate of like the best Phillies starting pitchers of all time, one difference you can see here that differentiates his narrative is that he's a free agent the Phillies signed, and he really didn't truly lock in health-wise, output-wise, command-wise, luck-wise until he got here. And I'm not saying this to give credit to any particular person or talk about like the magic of baseball and the Phillies or whatever. It's just that is something that's very unique, I feel, in his legacy among some of the best Phillies pitchers, that it took coming here to really lock things into place, which I think is really notable for him. There is a comparison for this, by the way, but it's Curt Schilling, and I don't want to talk about him.
I'm assuming you also brought all that up just so we can all crap on the Mets, because that is an extraordinary that's an extraordinary amount of things to have gone wrong with this guy who is just right now untouchable. They're barely the same pitcher. Like, I completely forgot that they signed Jason Vargas to take his place and then shoved him in the minors. Like, that's Zach Wheeler you're talking about. He is so far from that now. Like, there are times, there are many, many moments that I just don't even remember he was a Met. I'm sure there are people on the Mets who don't remember he was a Met, mostly to stop themselves from crying to sleep at night.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's got to be more of like an age thing, because the people, they remember all too well that Zach Wheeler was on the Mets. If they weren't having like a successful era or of sorts-ish at the moment, then like Wheeler having success with the Phillies would be hitting them even harder.
It is interesting, Justin, the kind of comparison you made there. And I think Schilling is a close comparison. I think Wheeler maybe may have had a little bit more success. Schilling had his first success with Philadelphia. I mean, Wheeler did have a little bit of success. That's why he was able to secure like a big free agent contract from Philadelphia, because he had gotten a little bit of success with New York. Schilling really was kind of seen as like a disappointing prospect before Philadelphia got him, and then he blossomed in with the Phillies. So, but it is really interesting, like you said, they haven't developed and many of their own star pitchers. Cole Hamels is one of them. But I wrote an article a couple of weeks ago about, where does Zach Wheeler rank? What is he trending towards in terms of like all-time greats on the Phillies? We may have discussed it on the podcast last time we did this. I don't remember. But, you know, nobody's going to pass Steve Carlton. But when you start looking at what he's doing, he's as dominant as Roy Halladay ever was in his time in Philadelphia. Right now, Zach Wheeler is as dominant as Roy Halladay was, and he's done it for a longer stretch of time than Roy Halladay did it in Philadelphia, specifically in Philadelphia. And when you look at Jim Bunning and Robin Roberts and all those guys, they're always going to have the counting stats over Zach Wheeler, because Zach didn't start this run until he was 30. What we're seeing is this, it is truly crazy how in his 20s, Zach Wheeler was an oft-injured, kind of disappointing, tantalizingly talented pitcher who simply couldn't stay on the field long enough to get it all together. And then suddenly in his 30s, he's transformed into one of the most durable, high-octane, reliable, innings-eating, high-velocity pitchers that baseball has seen in years. It really is incredible that he's doing this in his 30s, and he couldn't stay healthy in his 20s. It really is a fascinating career arc for Zach Wheeler, and I kind of wonder, as he's been the best pitcher in baseball since he came to Philadelphia in 2020. You look at all of the numbers, he's essentially number one or number two. I kind of want to get a sense from you guys. Liz, I'll start with you. How many more seasons does he have to put together before maybe you consider him a Hall of Famer? Because I think the traditional ways we put Hall of Fame pitchers in the Hall of Fame are going away. 300 wins is not going to be a thing anymore. I don't even think 200 wins is going to be a thing anymore. The way pitchers are used nowadays, it's probably not 3,000 strikeouts. It's probably more like 2,500 strikeouts. You know, the numbers, the keystone numbers that you need for a pitcher to get into the Hall of Fame are going to change over this next generation of starting pitchers simply because of their usage and how the game has changed. So I'm curious from you, how many, he's got another, what, 3 years on his contract in Philadelphia? If he pitches like this through the end of his contract, does that get it done?
I think it might. If you could show like a big chunk of time where he was just consistently good, I think that'll do it. Because I think Felix Hernandez is going to make it to the Hall of Fame, you know?
Yeah.
King Felix has all this allure of a pitcher who just didn't, who was so good for just a single stretch of time, and just, you look at the, you know, one end and it was just really bad, but that doesn't discount what he did. And I think especially if it's at the end of his career when he was older, I think the Hall of Fame is really, I think they'll really go for that. You know, there aren't going to be a lot of pitchers like we saw making the Hall of Fame anymore. You know, I think it's going to be a tough draw for some of these guys until the Hall of Fame age average goes down a little bit, for whatever reason it might. Until that happens, I think it might be a little tough, but Wheeler is going to hit the Hall of Fame in 8 years, you would assume, 8-9 years, and that'll be the perfect time for a guy like him to go in front of the voters and for them to look at his stats and be like, holy crap, maybe he didn't win a Cy Young, but that doesn't matter as much. Chase Utley's probably going to make the Hall of Fame without an MVP.
Yeah.
You know, that stuff is just not as important anymore because people finally understand that awards are inherently unfair.
Yeah.
And if there's more of a turn towards focus away from counting stats and more towards what's the alternative for like strikeouts per nine and, you know, like, rate
slightly ratings. Advanced stats.
Just more, I guess, with more focus on those types of stats, which is I think a more realistic view for these more modern pitchers, because if you're trying to hold somebody to a standard from another era, well, that's not the standard because it's a different standard now. So it just changes what the standard is. So I feel like Wheeler, if he has several more years of pitching like this in him, I mean, how can you not put a guy like that in the Hall of Fame with the numbers he's putting up now? I mean, it's just silly. Like, he's going to probably have his third straight year of at least 200 strikeouts. He's already finished. You know, we talk about him not winning a Cy Young. Well, the writers are kind of in charge of that. And they're also in charge of voting him into the Hall of Fame. So if they want to blame themselves for not voting him for him for years where he could have won the Cy Young, like in 2021, like in 2024, then, okay, I don't know how you hold that against him. That was you who decided to let him finish second instead of first twice. And that's two out of the three times he's finished in the top 10 of Cy Young voting since just coming to Philadelphia, a time when he's also, by the way, gotten MVP votes as well. So I don't know how you argue against Zach Wheeler going to the Hall of Fame if he does more of this several more times.
I 100% agree. And I do think, you know, you're going to see pitchers getting into the Hall of Fame with 150 wins, with 2,000 strikeouts. But I have always been somebody who believes that if you are one of the two or best players at your position for the better part of a decade, you're a Hall of Famer. And it's not the Hall of Stats, right? It's the Hall of Fame. You know, I mean, he is one of this generation's most iconic pitchers, especially when you consider his postseason accolades too, and everything he's done in the playoffs. You factor all that stuff in. I think if he can continue to another couple of years of this, I think another couple of years of doing this. But my goodness, there was a little concern. I had a little concern this year coming into the season about Zach Wheeler, just because he's getting older and all the innings he's accumulated. Will we see a step back? And instead, he's having the best season of his career here at age 35. So really,
I'll go a step further and say he doesn't even need to be this good for the rest of his career. If he wins the Cy Young and a World Series this season,
yeah, I think
that takes
right.
the pressure off the next couple of years.
Yeah,
completely. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a great point. You're right. Zach Wheeler is an all-star, as is Kyle Schwarber. The Phillies have two all-stars on the roster, the same number as the Washington Nationals, which of course makes all the sense in the world because it's a really great system that we have. Trey Turner, Christopher Sanchez, Ranger Suarez all did not get into the all-star game. I didn't think Turner would get in because of a numbers game, but I assume that would be because Mookie Betts also got in. And Mookie Betts did not make the National League All-Star team this year. Only two shortstops. Only three shortstops were taken, I think it was. No, two shortstops. You have Ellie De La Cruz and who was voted in? Francisco Lindor are the two National League shortstops to get into the All-Star game this year. Curious what you guys think, who you guys think. Well, first of all, let's talk about the guys who made it, Kyle Schwarber and Zach Wheeler. Zach Wheeler looks like he'll probably start the All-Star game, I think. Is that kind of where we're trending? I'm not sure where he pitches, when he pitches Zach Wheeler this coming week. I know that factors into whether or not he's even going to be able to pitch in the game, to where his spot in the rotation comes Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday would be. That might be a little tricky for him to get in the game. Maybe if it's just an inning or two, which it would be, that probably he'd be able to do that.
Maybe they move him around. Maybe they shuffle the rotation to give him that special treatment. But yeah, I mean, you know, Wheeler, I think, should be the starter. I want to say like they owe him, but I don't want that to mean that that's now in place of the Cy Young. He should win if he keeps pitching like this. I don't know. It'll be cool. It would be very cool for him to be the starting pitcher in the All-Star game. I feel like that kind of in a way, as far as like all-star feelings go, kind of makes up for only having two. If one of them's the starting pitcher, that's like, I don't know, that's as good as like a spot and a half kind of thing. And if Schwarber was participating in the home run derby, I'd make the same argument, but he said he wasn't. And that's
why, Kyle?
Hey, look, honestly,
next year, he said, maybe next year.
I'm fine with a low-key presence at the All-Star game for the Phillies this
Same
year.
Enough.
I'm totally fine with
Fair
it.
Enough.
Last year was crazy, and next year is going to be even crazier.
Oh, yeah.
I'm
That's
sure
true
there will
too.
Be enough Phillies-wise next season at the All-Star game. So this
if
year,
Schwarber's here next year.
I'm not even referring to Schwarber specifically. I'm referring to him just being one of two All-Stars. And I'm fine with him not being in the home run derby. You know, obviously it would be cool, but I'm cool with that decision. And I'm cool with everything just kind of being more relaxed and low-key. Yeah, I mean, he totally deserves to be there. We talk about what a unique player he is. And, you know, you look at the numbers and they're like weird. And no one, but like as that kind of player, he's having a great season as that kind of player. He's slugging. He hits lefties like nobody else in the business. And, you know, you see the fruits of that every night. He's what, fifth in home runs with 27. Yeah. That's a guy who can be on the All-Star team, you know? So he's totally deserved. And obviously Wheeler, you don't even need to talk about it. That's an all-star right there. Well, so yeah, I'm cool with it just being the two of them.
And Liz, I'll say too, Kyle Schwarber, I know he's had some times this year where there's been some slumps, but I don't think we've seen the streakiness from him here in 2025 that we've seen in previous seasons. I mean, there have been some slumps, but he does seem to pull himself out of them a lot quicker here this season, which has really saved this offense. We haven't seen like an entire month where Schwarber is nowhere to be found.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, and he deserved to be an all-star only because what guy in his 30s just suddenly learns how to hit lefties? Just like to the extent that he has been.
Like, it's crazy.
his ability to hit lefties has saved the Phillies a number of times this season because, you know, Kyle Schwarber is doing it. So he definitely deserves to be an All-Star. And he's been one of the All-Stars of the Phillies. He's played almost every game.
Yeah.
And I'll
he
say,
hasn't
John is
screwed up in the field like Dick Castellanos. Granted, he doesn't play a fielding position, but
very little.
I would say, John, June was a rough month for him. But even with that being the rough month, where he like struck out more than any other month so far this year, and his batting average dropped down to .214, that's the stat you don't really measure Kyle Schwarber on,
correct?
Because he was still slugging over .400 when he was hitting .214 in June, and he still hit six home runs for you. So. Yeah. You know, that's just, again, that's the kind of player he is.
Yeah. He's their best offensive player. And it's not even close. I mean, maybe you make the argument for Trey Turner, but I think in terms of pure impact, Kyle Schwarber is this team's best offensive player. He's, again, the one player they could least afford to lose. I mean, I think they, like we saw, you could afford to lose Bryce Harper for a little bit of time, and the Phillies kept winning. I think they'd find it much harder to maintain their offense without Kyle Schwarber in the lineup because there's just no one there who can hit home runs the way that he can. And that's really how he helps them in such a big way. So obviously some snubs with Trey Turner not getting on the All-Star team, Christopher Sanchez, Ranger Suarez. It is incredible to me that the best starting rotation in baseball has one starter on it. One pitcher from this Phillies pitching staff is on the All-Star team. The San Francisco Giants have three pitchers on the All-Star team, which is
again
just
more Phillies disrespect. I'm just gonna
bananas.
Say
bananas. Absolutely, the disrespect is just smacking us in the face.
Chris Sanchez just had an 8-inning start.
Yeah,
he was incredible. Ranger Suarez has come back, and after a rough beginning, has just sort of picked up where he left off early last year. These are good pitchers that deserve to be in the All-Star game. Am I all that upset that they're not? I mean, I'm upset. Like,
your voice sounds a little upset.
I am upset in that way. But when I think about it, I'm just like, maybe they should just have vacations with their families. Maybe that's their reward.
I think Ranger would have liked to pitch in the All-Star game because he didn't get to pitch last year. Christopher Sanchez, I can imagine you might be right about that. And Trey Turner started last year, played a bunch of innings. I'm sure he doesn't really mind not going to the game either. But I'll ask, who's the biggest snub, Justin? Who is the biggest snub of the Phillies from this All-Star team this year?
Out of the three, well, out of anybody, I guess. But
well, if there's
three,
anybody else you think was a bigger one.
Yeah, no, it's really tough to turn away from the National League leader in hits and say that he is not an All-Star in Trey Turner. But my instinct is Sanchez, because he's been around for the full season. He's got about 25 more innings than Suarez. Suarez, they've still got on a pitch limit, or at least they did his last time out. And while Suarez is probably the most stifling of anybody in that rotation, including Wheeler, that's his specialty. He can just sit on a lineup's head for 7 innings and they just can't do anything. Dan Gelston wrote, Suarez has not allowed more than one earned run since June 7th at Pittsburgh.
That's a long time.
He's permitted one or zero earned runs in 9 of his last 12 starts.
And by the way, he did not win Pitcher of the Month last month because of Zach Wheeler. That tells you how good Zach Wheeler was, that he won it over Ranger Suarez, who just did what you said, which was crazy.
All you ever hear is three of the top 4 pitchers in FWAR are Phillies in the National League. And then also Jesus Luzardo might throw a no-hitter or get shelled into the Delaware River, depending on what day it is.
Who knows?
So it's always fun to see those stats. And that's why I keep leaning towards Sanchez. They don't pick all-stars by specific pitches, but if they did, Christopher Sanchez's changeup would at least be in the all-star game. He's got one of the best pitches in baseball in his changeup, and Aaron Nola was just telling Tyler Kepner that everybody's ahead of that pitch every time. Everybody. Every time. Sanchez shows up in the majors with this gritty, obligatory changeup and then moves his index finger over a little further than he has it when he's thrown his sinker one day. And then, bam, one of the best pitches in baseball happens.
It's hilarious to me that the Phillies tried to build an offensive powerhouse and accidentally lucked into the best rotation in baseball with some dudes that they had.
Yeah.
You say luck, but with all the Zach Wheeler praise going around, if you're giving Matt Klentak credit for acquiring Zach Wheeler, well, guess who noticed a guy in the Rays farm system who could throw 98 and stood 6.5 feet tall. So once another piece of the Matt Klentak, what is that called? Rehabilitation. It falls into place here. So I say Sanchez, he's got fewer caveats to his success because Suarez, you know, missed time with injury and everything. Though I don't really have any complaints about seeing any of these guys in the All-Star game. Like I said, I'm happy with a more low-key year, but these are objectively snubs. I just want Ranger to stay healthy, but Sanchez also, you know, he deserves to be there, I think. He's just got a more consistent, stable amount of success since the start of the year. But if it was determined by coolness, Ranger Suarez would probably be starting the game.
Yes, I think that's true.
And I think about the biggest snub, Trey Turner is having one heck of a season at shortstop. I think there's every argument to be made that he was a bigger snub than either of the two pitchers that didn't get selected, just based on the fact he leads the National League in hits. He's playing exactly how you wanted him to play at the start of the season. I've said this, I think, on the last three podcasts with regards to Trey Turner, and it really is. He's been very consistent this year, which is not something we have seen from him in his first two seasons in Philadelphia. He's been outstanding. The defense comes and goes. He made a bad error on a double play ball over the weekend and got very lucky, and the next hitter hits another ground ball right to him for a step on second, throw to first double play in the Ranger-Suarez game. So, I think it's probably Christopher Sanchez is the biggest snub, and I think probably Ranger Suarez is too, followed by Trey Turner, but it's really, really close because Turner is having an outstanding season. I think he's having a better season than he had in the first half last year when he was the All-Star starter at shortstop. And I am surprised that if they were going to only take, you know, the two shortstops, that Mookie Betts wasn't the third one, first of all, but you know that Trey Turner couldn't find his way onto the roster if Mookie Betts wasn't going to be an All-Star.
Mookie's hitting .250, man. This isn't a stud Mookie Betts year, unfortunately.
Yeah, I guess not. I haven't been paying close enough attention, I suppose.
And I think part of the reason why Turner wasn't picked is because they still want every team to have one All-Star.
And
they couldn't apparently make room for anybody else. They had to bring all three of the Giants pitchers.
And see, that's my thing.
Them.
Yeah, that's the thing.
We've
talked about this every year when we do the All-Star game, because I'm one of the few people, I think, who likes having a team having one All-Star representative, because I think it gives fans of every team a reason to watch the game. As a Phillies fan who grew up in the late 80s and early 90s, there were a number of years when I wasn't sure that any of my players were going to get on the team, and it was nice to know that at least one would be Pat Neshek'd onto the team, one would be Ricky Bitalico'd onto the team. We'd have at least one reason to watch, and this was during a time when you didn't have interleague play, so this was your only time to watch a Phillies pitcher or Phillies player play against the other league's best players. For people who weren't watching baseball before interleague play, watching a Phillies player go up against a Yankees pitcher or a Phillies pitcher go up against a Red Sox hitter was mind-blowing to somebody in the 1980s. Like, you just couldn't, it was bizarre to see.
Are we all thinking
like
the same thing?
Well, I know why, like, everybody remembers John Kruk and Randy Johnson, but when they talk about that leading up to it, it's like they're talking up like an alien ship landed and Randy Johnson stepped out of it and John Kruk was like, I'm the one that's got to go meet this guy, like, I just don't know about this, like, they were from different planets.
Am I
and that's
truly
something
the
that's,
best representative,
it's going to be right. completely lost on other people. I mean, that's just the nature of the game changing.
Well, and that's right, because John Kruk said, I've never faced him, and I don't ever.
He's like, I'm not facing him. I'll quit. I don't care. What does he say? He's like, I'll go home.
A whole other league. There was no reason to face him.
His exact quote was, I don't want any part of that.
And yet, he went and faced him in the batter's box, and we all saw what happened. So, all right. We've been talking about this Phillies rotation, specifically the top three. You can throw Jesus Luzardo in there. I'm very curious to see what Aaron Nola is going to look like when he joins the rotation. Who knows when that will be, but it sounds like sometime after the All-Star break. But I think we can all see that this starting rotation is really special. Certainly this season that Zach Wheeler is having is really, really special. This probably will be, if he continues on like this, his best season. And it would be an absolute crime for the Phillies to waste this type of starting rotation, and specifically the type of pitching they're getting from Zach Wheeler, Ranger Suarez, Christopher Sanchez, Zach Wheeler in particular, which is making me rethink my preseason thinking about what you do at the trade deadline. How all in do you go? How much do you go in on one season to try and strike while the iron's hot, keeping the window open versus taking advantage of an opportunity? And I'm starting to come around to the thought of the Phillies need to be very aggressive at the trade deadline. And I've gotten to a point where I'm willing to deal almost anyone. I mean, I think Andrew Painter might still be my absolute no-go, but I have become way more open to moving pretty much everybody else in the farm system, specific for the right player, for a player like who can really make a difference specifically for the offense, and but also for the bullpen, obviously, to get a late inning guy. But I look at this offense, and I think this is what most Phillies fans are struggling with right now. We all enjoy a first-place team. We all enjoy watching this team play well. They're winning series, right? They have like a 500 record since June, but that was a really bad stretch at the beginning of June. Since then, they've been fine. They're winning more series than they're losing, and they're coming out on top in most of these games. But it's ugly, and the offense continues to look like the thing that will do them in October. And so there's just, in my soul, there is a cry for some kind of change, some kind of addition that will help mitigate what we've seen from this offense, how, you know, Nick Castellanos or Real Muto or Stott, and how you just, from left field, center field, you're just not getting anything offensively from most of those different positions. This is a season where Dave Dombrowski, I really do think, needs to go all in. I'm not normally a big all-in guy, but we're seeing a historic season from Zach Wheeler, from this starting rotation. We're not going to see this again. So I'm curious, has what you've seen from the starting rotation, Justin, specifically Zach Wheeler, is it changing your mindset at all about how aggressive Dave Dombrowski should be at the All-Star break? Are you still kind of just like, don't blow the farm system away, keep the window open, let your prospects come up and try and, you know, refuel the system as you roll along and go with what you've got?
I guess it's, I mean, being asked that question makes me feel like I too am veering closer towards, yeah, let's go for it. I mean, this is a situation where it's now not just, oh, well, this is their fourth try and who knows who will and who will not be here next year. And not in the sense of like, oh, what if these guys don't get to all be friends anymore? In the sense of like, what if you lose Kyle Schwarber and the replacement isn't as good? What if you lose JT Realmuto and the replacement isn't as good? And, you know, that's its own question, but like, the pressure, I don't know. I mean, is the pressure on? Because then I always say they've worked to elevate the franchise past, you know, windows being open. And it's more like, we're going to try. We're going to have a really good team. And if we got to retool, we'll retool. It won't take long. We'll be back in the postseason. We'll have another shot sooner rather than later. But I guess all that is just a nice way to circumvent actually answering the question. And yeah, I mean, I'm not ready to let go of Painter, and I'm not saying I'm excited to trade any of these other guys who we've been following over the past few years, but the truth is, none of these guys are like even as hot as prospects as they were a year ago. Aiden Miller is not having as great a year. Justin Crawford, you know, they've shown improvement a couple of times, but I wouldn't say that these are like leaps and bounds. These are our, you know, this position of the future, definitely mark it down kind of guys, other than Andrew Painter, who has been factored into the plan this year before this year even started. So yeah, I feel like if it means Dave Dombrowski gets to widen his search more, because they're willing to let go of more guys, then yeah, I think you're right. Because the historic nature of the rotation really does change that. It's not just year four of a campaign where we really thought we would have won by now. It's like, yeah, how many more times are you going to be able to rely on this? You learned that lesson with the bullpen. For 2 years, you had a good bullpen in Philadelphia. And all you're thinking the whole time is, when's this going to end? Well, it ended. You don't have a really good bullpen anymore. So you know the nature of pitching, and you know the nature of how teams can kind of fall apart like that. So, yeah, I feel like there's more reasons to go for it than there are to play it close to the chest, honestly. I really do. So the Phillies, it's interesting. You know, I think you talk about like what people have been frustrated about with this team, and there's this frustration that they haven't really like raced out ahead even with like the Mets struggling and the Braves struggling. And this is very similar to 1978 when Tug McGraw actually wrote a column in the paper talking about how people like are mad at the Phillies and frustrated with the Phillies because they weren't racing out to this 15 game lead. And he was like, well, there's reasons for this. One is that, you know, when you're good, like the Phillies have been for a few years, people put a target on your back and bad teams play better against you. So the competition gets tougher. Also, the pressure put on the team by fans and the press about how they didn't have a 15 game lead in the division was paradoxically preventing them from having a 15 game lead in the division. Starts to feel like I'm describing like a dream I had at some point.
Bit, yeah.
But yeah, the last point he said, and the only one with stats behind it, was hitting. And he was like, the Phillies have been great at hitting the last few years, but by now more pitchers have the book on them than before. They needed to adjust and they hadn't fully done so, but you know, it'll come. And that's kind of paralleling here in that the strengths of your team aren't necessarily reliable year to year. You can sign a guy like Bryce Harper to, you know, the deal he's going to have for the rest of his career. But at some point, you know, there's going to be strengths that you're not going to be able to rely on anymore. And all I'm talking about when I'm talking to these other writers and media members about the teams they cover on the Friday episodes of Hittin' Season is that this team relies on its starting pitching like it's their spine. And so when you have a strength that's that reliable, you got to take advantage of it because it can go away and it will go away, you know, maybe next year, maybe not for a couple years, but that eventually strength fades and you got to adjust. So before that happens, it would be great to take advantage of having a historic amount of strength in your starting rotation.
Liz, how do you feel?
I'm with you. I'm with both of you. This is the time to open up every drawer, throw open every cabinet, you know, look for everything, examine everything, and do what you have to do because the team as it is has a ceiling. And the only way it gets better than what it is if you add someone new to it. You need to add someone new, something new, they need someone in the bullpen. They really, really need an outfielder. For the love of God, one Please. Outfielder who can hit and field his position. Really.
Or a third baseman who can move Bohm over to first and put Harper back in the outfield, which Harper has said he is willing to do. Because I'm going to talk about Harper in just a second, but I mean, I know Eugenio Suarez and Alex Bregman are going to be free agents at the end of the season. So essentially, you're getting them on 1 year deals. It's expected Bregman's going to opt out of his contract, which he can do. So I know you don't want to give up a major piece for a rental, but Eugenio Suarez is going to hit 40 home runs this year, and he hits from the right side of the plate. Alex Bregman may not hit quite that many, but he's going to be 25 to 30 home runs, and he's also having an outstanding offensive season for the Red Sox. If they're moving players, he could be one of the players available. How aggressive do you get for somebody like that? Like, you put one of those guys in the middle of your lineup, you know, in between Schwarber and Harper or some combination. All of a sudden, that lineup looks a whole lot different. Yeah, I know you're shuttling some different people around, but you kind of solve your left field problem by putting Bryce Harper out there. Even if Harper is down this year, he still leaps and bounds better than any kind of Max Kepler, Otto Kemp platoon situation you have going on out there. And then you've got Bohm over at first base, and you've got Eugenio Suarez at third base. I mean, I think we got to stop thinking of like, well, gee, who's the right-handed hitting outfielder we can get to platoon with Max Kepler? You know, maybe we shoot for something a little bit higher than that. But listening to Dave Dombrowski's comments over the last week or so, it does not sound, and I know he's not going to tip his hand, but I got to say, over the last couple years, what Dave Dombrowski has said leading up to the trade deadline, it's kind of been what they've done. Like, there hasn't been a whole lot of subterfuge from Dave Dombrowski the last 3 years. He's kind of soft-pedaled it leading up to it, and then soft-pedaled it at the deadline. I don't think he's working some sly game here where he's, you know, I got all these plans in the works, you know, and they'll never see them coming. I don't think that's the Dave Dombrowski we're dealing with right now. So I don't know. If they went out and they, like, if they traded for Ramon Laureano, who's having a very good offensive season, okay. You know, that'd be fine. You know, Byron Buxton from the Twins, again, that could be a really fun addition. There's a lot of risk there, too. And for somebody like that, you may have to give up somebody you really don't want to give up. Like, there's nobody out there that's just like, oh, my gosh, great fit. right-handed hitter, position of need, 2 years of team control here. Have Aiden Miller. You know, like there's just there really isn't that, like there's going to be some kind of pearl clutching no matter what they do. But I think this is the year you do it. This is the year you make a move that makes you uncomfortable as a general manager, because you have a team that this might be their best chance at doing this.
You know, it can always feel like an overpay on July 30th or whenever the deadline is. But by August 15th, when that guy's mashing for you in exactly the way you needed somebody to, you're not thinking about what he cost at all. And when you're holding that trophy, you're not thinking about what he cost at all. And later, when that prospect you gave up is really excelling with the team you gave him to, you can still look over at that World Series trophy and be like, yeah, what, you know, clearly there was something to gain from this. So, you know, I there's always the risk that they make a trade that in some people's minds impacts the future of Phillies baseball, or changes how they thought the next few seasons would come together with a prospect they really liked. You know, there's always going to be heartbreak when it comes to prospects in one way or another, but it's just tough to deny that, like, I don't know if the Phillies even planned on having a rotation this utterly dominant this season.
They did not. No.
So again, taking advantage of that should be paramount, because if this just results in another, you know, playoffs and then early exit, you know, what really at the end of the day makes it different from the other seasons, you know?
Right.
It'll be a great video yearbook where you talk about all these great stats your starting pitchers put up, but ultimately, if you didn't do everything you could to win at the trade deadline, then I don't know what to tell you. I mean, like, that's just a rough place to find yourself when the season's over. So, yeah, I don't know. It's also just every year when you're a team in contention, tough to deny the appeal of whatever, just get the people we need as the days between you and the trade deadline get closer and closer and closer. Like, you just, it's really hard to deny that instinct. And Honestly, the Phillies farm system has some interesting guys and some fun guys and cool guys that you followed or whatever. But if you can trade like three or four of those guys who aren't Andrew Painter and come back with two players you really need, I don't know. I am, you know, I've followed the Phillies minors more closely the past few years than I had in the time before. But even I'm sitting here saying, yeah, I don't know. I mean, Justin Crawford's still hitting a lot of ground balls, man. So if you were trying to change that, I don't know if it's changing.
Toss a Bryson Stott in there and you've got yourself a nice package somewhere. Right. And I love Bryson Stott. Believe me, I adore him. But you could send him out the door and get something better back. I think you could if you pair him with some prospects. Like, Eugenio Suarez sounds like a great addition. He's going to hit a lot of home runs, which the Phillies, by and large, have not been doing.
John, would you trade Aiden Miller and Justin Crawford for Eugenio Suarez if that was the offer?
I would probably want to get a reliever back as part of that exchange. I probably wouldn't do it. Both of those guys for just him. I think that's too rich for a rental. I would trade one of them. I would trade Aiden Miller for Eugenio Suarez.
It's like Aiden Miller and like Eduardo Tait for Eugenio Suarez.
Yes.
Yeah, I would do that.
I would do that.
That's probably closer to what you're looking at. One of those headliners and then like another guy whose name you know. But it's like not close to the majors.
Those are two top 100 prospects.
And that's
kind of what you need to do at the trade deadline. If you're going to go for it, that's going for it. Like, that's what the definition of going for it is. You know, and color me someone who's not as, you know, when have the Phillies since Ryan Sandberg? I'm racking my brain trying to think of a time when the Phillies traded away like a prospect that ended up blossoming into a superstar someplace else. I can't think of one.
You can't even count J.P. Crawford because he was up in the majors for a while.
I'll say Carlos Carrasco. Really well. Carlos Carrasco and the Cliff Lee deal in 2009.
Oh, God, you're right.
They rode Cliff Lee to the World Series. And I'm telling you right now, no one regrets that deal.
No.
What Cliff Lee did in 2009, taking them to the World Series, totally worth Carlos Carrasco. And Carrasco had a great career with Cleveland. But there just hasn't been, like, Travis d'Arnaud in the Halladay trade.
That was the name that popped into my head.
Yeah, great career, but not somebody that you're wistful for missing out on.
No, there's really no one.
So what are we hemming and hawing for? You know, like I'm growing with each, and as I watch this pitching staff, as I watch this rotation, I do not want to waste it. I do not want to waste it. And I think this is the year to not waste it. All right. Last thing before we wrap up, how worried are you about Bryce Harper since coming back from the injured list? 3-for-17 at the plate, 8 strikeouts. Since coming back again, we kind of figured that it would be a little bit of a time for him to get his feet back under him. But there's a concern out there that the wrist just isn't right, and he knows it, and he's still not 100% back. I mean, I think we all know he's not 100%. And I think the idea is that he's not going to be 100% this year, but that the idea is that he can play through it, or that he can be somewhat productive through it. He looked as lost this weekend against Cincinnati as I've ever seen him. And really, we're looking at it's been a lost first half for Bryce Harper. 252, 365, 426 slash, a 791 OPS. For a lot of players, that's a pretty solid first half. But when he's your superstar, he's your guy, the power's not there. He just hasn't impacted many games this year. Like what I'm trying to think of, like how many games has Bryce Harper, do you remember? Like that was a great Bryce Harper game this year. There haven't been any. So it's been a lost first half.
Didn't have a multi home run game at some point.
I think maybe
not to be that guy.
He might have. I think he did have a multi home run game. Was it a three? Did he have a 3 home run game this year?
That was last year.
Yeah.
Anyway, those have been few and far between, and I have no doubt that he's not going to go 3-for-17 in every series moving forward, but at the same time, he doesn't look right. And Liz, I guess I just want to ask what your level of concern is for Bryce Harper here in the second half. Do you think it's more likely that he figures it out and we get a couple months of a hot Bryce Harper? Or, you know, we've reached the midpoint of his contract in Philadelphia. Like officially, like last week was the midpoint of his contract. So it's absolutely, obviously, the contract has been worth it no matter what happens from this point on. But are we seeing a point in Bryce Harper's career now where, man, the injuries are just going to kind of be there and you're worried about the wrist all season? And is it going to affect him? What is your thinking? Where are you at on Bryce Harper right now?
I don't want to presume anything about the future because we have evidence that guys in their mid-30s can do great things.
Right.
So I don't want to opine too much on the future, but I think I'm not expecting too much from him for the rest of the year. His desire to play trumps any concern about his physical well-being. And despite the fact that people have said over and over, please don't do that, he's going to do what he does. And so if he's not 100%, then I can't expect, it's unfair to expect anything from him. I won't. He's not the guy that I'm going to be looking to change the game, to hit a big lead-changing home run, to do something, you know, acrobatic or theatrical. That's just not who he is this year. You know, it's sad, you know, until he puts his health first, which he's going to have to start doing. He has to start doing that at some point. But until he does it, you know, this is just going to be his story.
And that, Justin, is one of the other reasons why I think it's even more important for the Phillies to kind of go all in at the trade deadline, because I think they are missing a big offensive weapon in Bryce Harper. And I don't know that it's coming back this year. And so if you don't want to fall apart in the playoffs and go through an offensive drought like they did against the Mets last year, you got to have somebody else in there who can pick up some of that slack that you're not getting from Bryce Harper.
Right. I mean, it's like, think about this moment in time where we're sitting here talking about potentially one of the greatest Phillies rotations ever. But the guy who was brought here to be the center of a World Series title here in Philadelphia is not having a very good year. I don't really think about the future with Bryce Harper. I take a very Gene Mauch approach where it's just, let's win today's game. That's literally where all of my attention is going to go, into today's game. And then after that, we'll start thinking about tomorrow. And Harper, I feel like you have really no choice to think that way. A, because of the kind of player he is, where when he is not hitting, when he's slumping, he does look lost. This isn't the first time in his career he's looked lost. The worrisome part to me is the wrist and how much healthier yes. it is and how much of an issue it's going to be moving forward. Because we've seen plenty of guys who, you know, either they have a wrist injury and, like, you know, they never really get their swing back for a while, or it's revealed, you know, months later, oh, he had like a wrist thing, and that was like contributing to his struggles. I mentioned Mookie Betts struggling this year. I mean, Bryce's numbers are kind of down there on the same level as Mookie Betts, and obviously they're different in... No, they're not. They're the same exact age. Huh, how about that? Glad I checked. Yeah, so they're the exact same age. And that's another superstar who's there to win titles and did last year. But still, the point is that guys who are at the top of their game can really get into holes like this. And I know with Harper, you know, again, the wrist part is the worrisome part. I want to see that get better. I want to see him hit just to know that the wrist isn't holding him back. Because when he gets into holes like this, when he goes into slumps, he looks utterly, you know, he'll look... Castellanosin at the plate when he is when he's like whiffing and just striking out on three pitches, because the harder the more he's struggling, the harder he pushes. He truly thinks yeah. he can homer his way out of a hole. And then last year when he hit three home runs in a game, he did homer his way out of a hole. So I think Bryce Harper can get back on track, kind of, you know, just give him the time and he'll do it. There's a chance he has a solid second half. But like you're saying, this is another indication of a ticking clock. I'm not saying this is the end of Bryce Harper, but it's just showing you that, like, hey, here's what a less superstar studly Bryce Harper might look like. And you got to be able to survive that. Fortunately, the Phillies have, you know, they're still in first place despite missing Bryce Harper for a big chunk of the season. And when he's here, he's not putting up the numbers you're used to seeing. But he's got some time. You know, there's still a whole second half for him to come through. And the Phillies have proven that he's not the strength they need to lean on all of the time. So I don't know. A lot of this is going to come down to the deadline. A lot of this is going to come down to what this Phillies team looks like after the deadline and what strengths and what vulnerabilities they choose to address, because, you know, there's some changes they can make that can give them a better shot at what they've been trying to do for the last 4 years.
I'll tell you, when I watch Bryce Harper right now, I get visions of, I see a lot of like 2011 Chase Utley, like Utley's still a productive player, but dealing with the knee issues, like, you could just kind of tell, like, the days of Chase Utley were gone, and you were moving into a different part of Chase Utley's career, where still, he's still a productive player, but he can't be the guy you're building around anymore. I don't know if that's where we are with Bryce Harper, because I think Harper's a little younger than Utley was at that point, but I don't think it's much.
No, Chase Utley was 32 in 2011. Same as Bryce Harper right now.
Okay.
So. Same as Mookie Betts as well. I will say, after the period you're talking about, Chase Utley then only went on to make appearances in three more playoffs. So sure. There is sure. still more to the story.
There's more. And I, like I said, yeah, he didn't.
I mean, they invented a whole new rule with his name right. in it after that point. Like, he was still impacting the game right. and also people's legs.
That's right. He didn't crater after 2011 and 2012, he's still a productive. That's what I mean. He was still a productive player. He was still a player on a playoff team. But he changed. Like, he wasn't the superstar anymore. And I'm not saying that that's definitely where we are with Bryce Harper. But, you know, there
none of us are saying that it's the end of the Bryce Harper era. And I'm sorry for cutting you off. But also, we're mentioning that we're halfway through Bryce Harper's deal. Hey, everybody, you gotta be ready for this.
Yeah.
All right.
We said that.
You gotta be ready for this. This is what we talked about. This is what we agreed mm-hmm. to. We said, right. give him what he wants to be here next year, whatever that takes. They gave him that. This is going to happen. If it's not now, it'll happen, you know, somewhere down the line where Bryce Harper just isn't going to be the guy they put on the cover of MLB The Show anymore. It's going to happen to Trey Turner. We thought maybe for a second it already had, yeah. but like, this is going to happen. This is, you got to just get in the mindset of, we signed people to like lifetime deals. They're not going anywhere, which is also part of my answer of, you kind of got to just get used to things sometimes, because yeah, he's not going anywhere.
No, correct.
So you got to just wrap your head around the fact that maybe Bryce Harper, 250 hitter, is a part of this offense, not now, forever, but like at some point down the line. Yeah, that's gonna happen, because that's what happens to human bodies.
Right. Well, and but my reason for saying this is that it should require a different mindset from the people in the front office in terms of
I totally agree.
Yeah.
You know, like if Dave Dombrowski's still sitting there thinking, Harper's still the heartbeat of the offense, and you know he's going to be that power stroke's coming back. It might. It very well might. And I hope it does. And I hope my pessimism isn't unfounded, but it might not. And you can mitigate that by going out and actually getting an impact bat at the trade deadline, of which there are some. Despite what Dombrowski tells you, there are some impact bats who might be available at the trade deadline. They're not all 220 hitters with little power and negative wins above replacement. All right, let's finish things up here. Just a couple things to mention real quick if you guys want to talk about these at all. Nationals fired Davey Martinez and Mike Rizzo this week.
Right before the draft.
Yes, nice the timing move, was interesting. So, yeah.
No, GM has been fired before the trade deadline since 2016?
Yeah,
I want to say.
Ooh, yeah.
So it's not something that happens a whole lot. And as far as the draft goes, that's comical timing. Fangraphs had a great column where they were talking about Mike Rizzo's first round draft picks. Obviously, you have Steven Strasburg, Bryce Harper, Anthony Rendon, Drew Storen. And then, as Fangraphs reads, the drop-off is staggering. There are about like 30 players on the rest of that list that have like less than one or negative wins above replacement in their major league careers. And one of them's Dylan Cruz, whose story is still, you know, yet to be written and everything. But at the same time, the drop-off has been very significant. And boy, the Nationals just never really got it together after 2019. And yeah, I mean, yikes. He was the longest tenured GM other than Brian Cashman until now. Did you know that? That's nuts.
That's crazy. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so.
Wow. All right, Phillies are... This is not a good sign. And Phillies embarking on a West Coast road trip into the All-Star break. This always goes well, right? I mean, yeah. Three in their house of horrors in San Francisco to start off the week Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. They have an off day Thursday, and then they finish up with three in San Diego, a place they generally play pretty well, to go into the All-Star break. Not an ideal way to hit into the break on a West Coast road trip, especially in a city where you rarely ever win. But we'll see how that all shakes out this week. Let's finish things up with some final thoughts here, guys. Liz, final thought from you?
Sure. My glasses back on for this so I can actually see. My grandmother died this past weekend, and so I wrote a little something. My grandmom Eleanor died Saturday morning. She was 93. She was a mother, a wife, a sister, an aunt, a cousin, a friend, a grandmother, a great-grandmother, a kind, no-nonsense woman who never wanted any fuss, and a lifelong Phillies fan. I started writing for Yahoo Sports and podcasting about the Phillies a few months after my grandfather died in 2018, and she was so excited and proud. She never got as far as podcasts in her technological education, but she learned to use a smartphone during COVID and loved texting, especially with emojis. She spent 99% of her life living in or very near to Philadelphia and watched the Phillies pretty much every day. We always talked about the Phillies when we saw each other. She was endlessly concerned about them maintaining a decent level of play, but was never surprised and was typically disgusted when they lost. You wouldn't be either if you'd seen what she'd seen. The Phillies had just reached their 50th year of existence when she was born in 1932. Over her 93 years, she saw 7,688 regular season losses and 6,970 wins. Oh, and 20 ties. She also saw 70 postseason wins and 63 postseason losses. She saw She saw 38 different men manage the Phillies, with Charlie Manuel managing the most and Gene Mauch the second most. She saw four Phillies pitchers win the Cy Young and seven position players win the MVP, with the earliest and the Phillies first coming when she was just 9 months old. She saw two World Series championships, four World Series losses, the 1950 Whiz Kids, the 1983 Whiz Kids, and one very Black Friday. She watched Jim Bunning's Father's Day perfect game in 1964, the first in the NL since 1880, Roy Halladay's perfect game in 2010, and eight more no-hitters. That's what she saw. And every game, I always knew she was watching, except for those Apple TV games and those disastrous Facebook games. Thanks, MLB. It's very weird to think that for the first time in my life, she will not be watching the Phillies with me. But because of the connection we shared, she will always be with me.
That was beautiful, Liz.
Thank you.
Our best to you and your family. And that sounds like a life well lived. So
it was
really great. Yeah, that's really great. All right, Justin, you want to try and follow that up with some final thoughts?
Yeah, I wish you would have gone to me
first.
Yeah,
I thought you were going to go to him first, and I almost didn't do it. I'm just like, what is he doing? How does
my
Justin
brain
follow this?
I fritzed out there. I fritzed out. Yeah, sorry about that.
I don't know if it would be appropriate for me to say anything at this point, other than I've lost three grandparents, all some more invested in baseball than the others, but... there's just a way when you're watching the game and you know they would have been watching, it still feels like they are watching in a lot of ways. So yeah, that was beautiful, Liz.
Thank you
for sharing.
And Justin, I'm sorry I torpedoed what might have been your other final thought. So that's on me.
Podcast is ending exactly the way she would have wanted it to end if she ever listened.
Check out the dirty inning.
do you want to hear the trade idea I was going to throw
oh,
at
please.
You? Instead?
Yes, let's do it. Come on.
Okay, Justin Crawford and Aiden Miller and Eduardo Tait.
Oh, man.
For Brian Reynolds and David Bednar.
No.
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 Okay,
no.
Interesting.
Because of Brian, I was just looking at Brian Reynolds' numbers this year and some of the stuff.
Buying low, for sure. Oof. But, you know, we were calling him a five-tool player not too long ago. And that gives Dave and probably Middleton the ability to feel like, oh, we're like getting a guy. It's another bounce back candidate. This is great. We're going to like save money or whatever.
They do love a bounce back.
God,
like if
they
you
do.
Get from Byron Buxton and a top twins reliever.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think I might be interested.
Byron Buxton.
Really? I'm sorry. Reynolds is signed through 2030, by the way. He's on an 8-year deal. I totally forgot they gave him an extension, so yikes. Byron Buxton. Man, you're going to... Danny Tartable. That's what you're getting when you're getting Byron Buxton. I'm sorry. I have no interest. I love him as a player, but stay on the field, man. What do we say going into this year? The Twins need Royce Lewis, Byron Buxton, and... What's his face? Astros. Correa. To stay on the field. Did that happen?
No. Nope.
So, you know, here we are.
Yeah. That would be a lot to give up for an oft-injured player as well. I get you.
Oft-injured. I mean.
Oft-injured.
That guy's in like, might as well sleep in the waiting room.
Say next to oft-injured is his face that you see in the dictionary.
His off-season home is an MRI machine.
My God.
Yeah, so
thinking about the ramifications of that, it's horrifically bad for his health. Maybe that's the
this
part. Maybe that's why he's been off the field.
Yeah,
so
that's true. Now we may have zeroed in on something.
What if they acquire Andrew McCutchen as their outfield?
Stop it. What are you doing?
I don't know.
What are you doing? You're putting stuff into the universe that does not need to be out there. We did that.
It's trade season. I'm just saying names.
Yep.
Next episode will feature us just saying names into the microphones and seeing how we all react.
Just asking questions. We're just asking questions. That's all.
That's my final third. Next episode, we're going to be doing Phillies All-Star Trivia.
Ooh,
so
something
that's
exciting.
Something to look forward to.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. So for the next roundtable, stay tuned for that, friends. We're going to do some Phillies All-Star Trivia. So I'm going to have to do some reading here over the course of the next week. So
you're going to prepare.
Knowing Justin's question is going to be something like, what color socks did John Kruk wear in 93 at the All-Star game? Or like, what beer did he drink after he struck out against? Yeah, whatever.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry if I made it sound like this would be fun. This will not be fun.
Very well. Good to know. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. And I want to encourage everybody to make sure to check out our YouTube page over at, YouTube. If you do a search for Hittin' Season on YouTube, you can find us there. All of the roundtable episodes are there, so you can watch the show on your smart TV. We'll have some clips of the show up there, too. And don't forget to tell your friends and family members about the podcast version of this show. Of course, you can tell them about the YouTube, but we're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcasts. There we are. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We will talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.